It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do a great MMA show. It's here with topics you like out of the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that Amber May spot.
Well, welcome to the Amber May Show. I am so glad that you joined me this week. And we have a very important topic that we are talking about this week. And we are talking about child abuse. And, you know, it happens all the time. And I think that as society, we need to do something more to protect the little ones who can't protect themselves. And this show this week is going to be a PG-13 type show. So if you have young children, please don't play this show around your young children. This is for mature audiences only. Joining me today is Tom Richardson. He himself has gone through child abuse, and he's going to share his story with us about what he's gone through, but he also has victory in it as well, and so we're going to talk about that. Why didn't you stay, ran away?
You know, I think I was too scared. I was too scared of being caught and the repercussions. I can't explain it, because I should have been more scared of going and talking to church leaders about it growing up. You know, I just still can't explain why people do the things they do. But I want to make it very clear to people, it's happening right next to you right now. Somebody, somewhere, if you just slow down a little bit and take a look, mm-hmm. You know.
It's true.
It's happening. If you don't, you're not sure, but you know, if a child comes to you and says, you know, let the people who investigate it. But they can't do their job unless we do ours as human beings.
That's right.
And step forward. Because
they can't know everything about everyone all the time.
No, and it's not going to change.
No.
And the thing is, you know, people think, you know, the torture I went through was terrible, and we've touched on this. You know, I couldn't even dress up for PE because the blood blisters would break and bleed through my jeans. It just goes on and on and on. But I want people to go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, how did you finally escape from that household?
Well, at 18, that was close. I'm trying to remember. I think I was right at 18, because she had pulled me out. We'd lived in Illinois at a point where she pulled me out of school at 16, which was legal, pulled me out of school and made me work full time. Again, never saw the money. When we moved to Idaho, I was almost 18. And I talked her into going back to let me go back to school. I really don't know how that happened, but I did. Went back for a semester. And I was turning 18, but I was still a junior. So she came to me, or they did, as parents, Richardson people, said, quote unquote, we'll let you move out. If we'll let you move back to Chicago, where we'd live, Schaumburg, Illinois, to be exact, if you can prove to us that you have a job or your old job back, because I worked at a pizza place back there, and you have somewhere to stay. Now, as an adolescent, you're not using all your brain cells yet. So I waited a few days and I thought, okay, it's been two or three days.
But how are you going to get there?
Well, they ended up using some of the money, I'm sure, that I had contributed over the years. And literally the day before I moved to Schaumburg, Illinois, Chicago, Illinois, they allowed me to go get my driver's license. Now, in Blackfoot, Idaho, at that time, 1981, there's no DMV. I got a driving test from a deputy sheriff.
Oh.
Okay.
Wow.
You go to the sheriff's office. They jump in the passenger seat, full uniform and everything. It's not like you're intimidated at all, you know, because
sure. This
is your driving test, by the
right.
way. And the guys that can write you tickets for it. Well, so we did a little drive test. You go, oh, you're good to go, you know, signed off on it, whatever. The day before, I drove from Blackfoot, Idaho to Chicago, Illinois. I got my driver's license and a 1974 baby blue Ford Pinto, which is the lamest car you could ever get a car as a first car.
But that is a miracle that your parents, I hate calling it that, your parents, who did nothing, who mistreated you pretty badly growing up, actually bought you a car. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that to me is a miracle.
Well, it is. I think now it is. But I look at that back then, 1981, I had probably earned close to $8,000. And this is by her own estimate. She wrote it on a piece of paper one time, and I took that with me when I moved, is that I think it was like $7,700. they spent like $700 on a little Ford Pinto, which, okay, I'm grateful for. I think it was more to get me out, because I was, not only was I talking more about the abuse, but I was manifesting it. I was talking about it when I met new people. That's a problem I've learned how to deal with. I wouldn't, this is an analogy, but I would literally say, hi, my name's Tom, and by the way, da da da. And I think I was, as you know, I have had visits with a psychologist that I love dearly, because he's helped me realize is that that was my way of validating. I want people to understand me, like, hey, you know, if people aren't looking at me going, oh, there's something weird different about him. You know, they've never met me. They're going, that's something different. I was pre-doing their judgment, if you will, by saying, hi, my name's Tom. This is what I went through. So as I was starting to do that more as a 17/almost 18-year-old, I think the Richardson parents saw that as a threat. They provided the opportunity, and I'm grateful for it. I waited a few days. Like I said, I told them, okay, I got my old job back, and I can live with one of the guys I worked with. I just made it up. That's why I say as an adolescent, we're not using our brain cells, because I never even picked up the phone.
I don't even care at that point. No. That was like safety for you. Oh, and I feel like all that could be arranged. I mean, what I mean?
Well, I'm sure they got that phone bill probably after I was well on my way, because I think it was within a week that I said, yeah, I got my old job back. I had neither. I drove to Chicago, Illinois. I remember as I drove into Chicago area, my favorite radio station from Chicago came. I finally got in range, and I literally let out the loudest scream that I, to this day, have ever done. And I don't know if it was joy, relief, exhilaration. Maybe all of the above. It was just every, I screamed so loud that it didn't startle me, but I screamed louder than I've ever screamed. And I was like, yeah, just, and I'm like, almost like I'm free. You're okay.
Free. You're free.
No job. And then it hits me. I got no job. I can't remember exactly, but I had less than $200 at that point, because I had enough money to get gas and some food on the way. But it was kind of like money was thin. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I literally hit the road, started looking for a job. Ended up working at a restaurant at night, you know, cooking.
So you got a job right away?
Well, pretty soon. I think within a couple weeks I did.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and then I got a job full-time at Sears building bikes. And just, you put them all together and put them out on the display floor. And then working at night as a cook. But I was still living in my car. I lived in my car for a couple months at a park. I would go to Sears and, because they had locker rooms. Yeah, I'd just go in there and shower every day and take care of myself. And it's interesting, because a family that we knew prior to this came to me several times. They're like, hey, how's it going? You know, just small talk. And essentially we're like, how, you know, where are you? I said, well, I'm staying with a friend. I was lying my butt off. I didn't realize this as a kid. Adults have some good intuition sometimes. And these two people are those type of people, the parents anyway. They had some of their own children. They followed me and saw me pull up in the park. And I was just kind of getting comfortable laying back in my car. And they came, tapped on the window. I remember him. And we, in the Mormon church at that time, we would call them brother and sister Alphabet, because their last name was Demetropolis.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was just, we called them brother and sister Alphabet. But anyway, they came, tapped on the window. And I just remember his looking at me and kind of shaking his head and kind of like, because they're a very humble guy. Like, I knew you weren't being honest. He goes, you need to come stay with us.
Finally.
You're right. Because finally somebody's opening their arms.
Finally.
You know, and that's what I want to share too. To this day, I'm 51. I have friends, you know, I won't mention last names, but, you know, Eric and Stacy, Seth, Mike, you know, Rick and Allison. People who, even as an adult, and I'm older than most of these friends, I mean, we're all close in age, who open their arms to me in the sense of friendship and literally have been a blessing in my life. And that comes straight from God. That's God's blessings, again, because I need it. God blessed me with the two beautiful, amazing daughters because I needed it. I need friends. Friends are my family. I don't, you know, even though I have the siblings I grew up with and we are close, we care about each other, there's been a sense of, even recently, that as we've talked, there's frustration on their end. They witnessed it. They saw it. They lived through it from witnessing it. Because I think their lives have been with their spouses, their families, their spouses' families, that it's been kind of like the secret, it's been quiet. And lately, you know, I've posted on Facebook on a couple child abuse blogs my whole story. I'm sitting with you sharing this for the first time verbally, if you will, publicly like this. This is having an effect on my siblings I grew up with. Now, I don't blame or fault them at all, because I think they've been dealing with it for all these years in the best way they know how. And it's, you know, and it was by focusing their lives in other directions. I was never a focus for them. Now, that's not a bad thing for them. I'm not condemning that. I'm just saying I think that's how they've had to deal with
it. Sure.
And now that I'm speaking up and it's becoming public, they've told me, why can't you just let this go? Why do we have to relive this again? Why do you want to bring it up? You know, hasn't it been enough time? You know, and bless their hearts. I know they're seeing it is different than going through it. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to relive it. But as I sit here with you, I've realized this in the past and recently, I refuse to remain quiet so other people can remain comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't take credit for that quote. I read that, but it stuck in my head. I am not going to remain silent so other people can stay comfortable.
You need to bring awareness to this subject so that other children might have a better chance and not have to have 9 surgeries like you and PTSD. Well, if you can catch it earlier, then they're going to have less traumatic mental health problems and they're going to have less physical health problems.
Yeah, I read something else too. It says if you spend more time loving a child, you'll spend a lot less time repairing an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. That's true. Very true, and it's accurate. There might be people listening who went through some type of abuse and been holding it in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of everybody, I think as many people as are on this planet, that's how many different ways people handle it.
Oh, I agree.
You know, and some people might be holding this in going, you know, as I'm talking, they're going, you know, maybe it's to the magnitude that I went through. Maybe it's not. Maybe it was worse. Whatever it was it was sexual? Was it rape? Was it? Somebody's listening and going through a hard time and going and held it in. And maybe they're feeling pain right now. But I would encourage you to pray, to ask for God's guidance, for his comfort, because it's real. It's as real as you and I are sitting here talking about this. It is real. We lose track of it because of the worldly interferences. Sure. But when we get rid of those interferences, God's will is stronger than anything we'll ever know. That's why I'm here. Other people need to hear my story so they understand. If it makes my siblings uncomfortable, I am sorry from the bottom of my heart. If she, the Richardson mother, is uncomfortable, you know, I'll share this. I wrote a letter about 8 weeks ago to the church leaders at the top, Salt Lake City. And I said, 4 pages of why. Why should a child, why should an adult... I'm even being told recently as an adult, it's in the past. Don't worry about it. Forget it. And this is part of the frustration I have with the church itself. And it's not a people thing. Because I love some of the people. Some of the people are the ones I've mentioned. But this can't keep going on. No. This can't keep going on no matter what the demographic is. No matter if they're poor or rich, an attorney or not so well off, or you know, Mormon church or Catholic church or whatever. If God were sitting next to us, would we do that?
Nope.
No. So there's somebody listening right now that needs to hear this. If the Richardson mother, who's 80 years old right now, what she did to me, she could have been arrested for multiple felonies, which equates into massive jail time. I mean, you think in totality what she did. And I didn't even share everything, you know, today. It would take longer. It went on every day for 13 years.
There was not a day of relief for you, huh?
The day of relief is when she was gone for the day, or if she was gone for a couple days. Literally. And what I did, this is a survival skill, I think of this. I wasn't a bad kid. I was a good kid. I really was, because I lived in too much fear. But I was stupid. When she was gone for a couple days, so was I. I didn't go to school for a couple days. And I would forge a note. Because to me, it was a stress relief. It was a, you know, just like going to school when she was there every day was a relief for me being in school. But when she was gone, it was kind of a, mentally, you're carrying too much. You're
adolescent. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And of course, you know, I paid for that. I paid for things I never even did. You know, that's a whole part of the conversation, too. But I am not going to be quiet anymore. It's going to hurt feelings. It's going to hurt people. People have told me, you know, you're doing this for the wrong reason.
No. Actually, this might be a healing process for you, too.
It is. I'm already starting to feel it because it's a validation. Every time it got blown off, I was told, not literally, like, but every time people blew it off, church leaders.
You're not important.
Exactly. I was told I wasn't important. I don't matter. Just she matters because we're not, just from a legal standpoint, we're not going to call the police. So she matters more than I did. And to this day, I still don't understand because that's still the same mentality and it's got to stop. It's got to stop. It's not fair. No more kids need to die. Not a single more. Why does the child have to die today?
So you're the voice for all those children.
I hope I can be. I hope I can be one of them. Mm-hmm. Because you know what? Children are a gift from God.
Sure.
In our lives.
Absolutely.
You know, I get frustrated when you watch the news and people, you know, somebody does some major crime and they say, oh, you know, well, he was abused as a child. And I'm like, and then they'll talk about it and like, yeah, his dad was rough on him. And I hate that because that is abuse. Don't misunderstand me. But I sit there and go, are you kidding me? That was a choice you made to commit that crime.
That's right.
Okay. I don't buy that. Children are dying every day. Quit saying they abused a child or they did something because...
Don't justify it, in other words.
It's justifying it, and it's not validating it for the victims. What that does is every time they justify it or say, you know, don't worry about it, it happened in the past, or, you know, whatever said, it's basically saying we don't care about the victim and we're validating the perpetrator more than we are the victim. Mm-hmm. That's got to stop.
That has to stop.
It has to stop. It's happening too much. And PTSD has no time frame. I might have mentioned that. But because of that, I'm 51 now and I'm like, hey, you know what? Yeah, it hurts like hell every day when I get up. And emotionally, it's I get up every day and I'm like, okay, handle today.
But every handle day, today.
But I'm getting up and I'm doing it.
I want the listeners, if they're struggling with something like that, I love what you just said. Just handle today. Just worry about today. And you know what? That's what Jesus tells us to do. And think about in the Lord's Prayer, it says, give us today our daily bread. And he even tells us, don't worry about tomorrow because tomorrow has enough worries of itself. Just focus on today. Right. You know, I want to thank you for coming on to our program, Tom. It was so brave of you to come on and share what you've gone through.
I appreciate you having me.
And I know that what you've gone through isn't for nothing. I'm sad that it happened to you, but it's not for nothing. Something good is gonna happen. You're touching people's lives, and you might not find out about it until you reach the golden gates of heaven.
Right.
But you are touching lives by sharing your story and being the voice for the voiceless.
And if I may, and I appreciate that so much, I appreciate being here. You know, if I could just say as we close up, you know, if people are listening and they're struggling, I don't mind if it's possible for people to reach out to me.
Okay.
I'm open to that. I want that because hearing other people's stories encourages me to endure.
Yeah.
And I know that people listening right now are going to be like, you know, okay, I'm getting up tomorrow morning and I'm going to survive today. I'm going to make it through.
That's right.
And do it with joy. Everybody remember this. Don't get up with anticipation of anger and pain and stuff, but do it to the best of your ability of getting up with joy. and knowing that God's going to bless you and walk you through that day. That is a struggle, but it's very possible.
Wake up and find, instead of the mindset about the negative, say, oh, what good is going to happen today?
And just
or what
talking
can
about
I
it.
Do yeah. to help somebody? What joy can I bring to someone
And that,
today?
That's why I say if they want to reach out, they want to, I don't mind that. I really don't, because let's all help each other. This isn't about me. I shared my story because I want to help others.
So how could people reach you?
You know what? I honestly don't mind if they reach out on Facebook.
Okay.
You know, it's Tom Richardson. I can, you know. Also, you know what? If I can just share, I'll share my personal email. But it's richardsonfamily01@yahoo.com.
richardsonfamily01@yahoo.com.
Yes, and they're more willing. Email me. Let's chat. Let's send emails back and forth. Let's, you know, support each other. And most of all, if somebody's suffering out there, stop suffering.
On Facebook, are you Tom or Thomas?
I am Tom.
You are Richardson, Tom. Okay, yeah. Tom Richardson.
Yeah.
And then Tom, and then richardsonfamily01@yahoo.com.
Yeah, and if they want to read this kind of in a totality too, and there's a Facebook blog on child abuse. It's called Stop Child Abuse. If they type it in the search window and look for Tom's story, it'll pretty much lay out every detail. Mm-hmm. Some, a lot of we didn't touch on, so mm-hmm. be prepared when you read it.
Well, thank you, Tom, for being brave and coming on the program. Remember, instead of thinking about number one, just yourself, think about number two, somebody else, because eventually number two will look out for you.